AM 790 Talk and Business presents Water Fire Ignites Rhode Island with your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser. Join Bronwyn to hear about the next water fire event in downtown Providence, plus other great cultural events happening in the community. Now, here's your host, Bronwyn Dannenfelser.
And good afternoon and welcome to Water Fire Ignites Rhode Island, the newest one-hour talk show and entertainment program on AM 790, your station for talk and business. And we are here with you every Wednesday, giving you a little behind-the-scenes tour of Water Fire and letting you know what you can expect at the upcoming events. And I am here with my wonderful co-host and the creator of Water Fire, Barnaby Evans.
Good afternoon, Roman.
How are you doing today, Barnaby?
I'm doing great.
I know that people have been running around the office and working nonstop, getting ready for this weekend's fire. It's going to be pretty big, huh?
Yeah, the weather's going to be beautiful. August 23rd, this Saturday, we're celebrating quite a few things.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's a wonderful way to kind of round out the summer, because I don't know how summer's escaped us, but it just kind of flew by. So we're really looking forward to some great events that we'll be seeing, and one of the ones that so many people love and ask about every year is our Clear Currents event, in which we celebrate clear currents and, you know, and our nice clean water systems. So in that light, for people who don't know what that is, during Clear Currents, we have anywhere between 88 to 100 kayakers and canoeists that actually are paddling through the fires, and mounted in those kayaks and canoes are these incredible 6 to 8 foot glowing, all colors, Japanese koi fish. Right, Barnaby?
Absolutely.
And it's probably one of the neatest things to just witness, all these fish out of water going through the fires. There's something funny about that, I think.
Well, we just sort of think of them as schools of fish swimming through the river of fire. But the idea was, we really wanted to draw attention to water quality on the Woonasquatucket, recognize a couple partners who we'll be talking to in a moment on the incredible progress that has been made over the last 30 years, really, but we're really seeing the results in the last 10 years.
Exactly, and I think, you know what, I think we need to hop into this, because we've got two guests here from great organizations, and that is their main mission, and really wonderful to introduce Tom Yuva, who's the Director of Planning, Policy, and Regulation for the Narragansett Bay Commission.
Welcome, good afternoon, Tom. Rowan. Thank you for having me here today.
And it was the Narragansett Bay Commission that actually we started this whole program with many years back.
It was... Well, let's introduce our other guests, and then we'll talk a little about the history. So we also have Alicia here from the Woonasquatucket Watershed Greenway Council. Is that the
Woonasquatucket River Watershed Council? Hi, Bronwyn. Yes. Hi, Barnaby.
Welcome.
Another group has been working for years to make the Woonasquatucket River the success that it is, and we'll talk about some of your programs and some of those successes. But Bronwyn was talking about the NBC joining us, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, well, I think, you know what, we were celebrating that you had just finished that project. What was that project?
That's right. We were christening the Phase 1 CSO Tunnel Project, which is essentially a 300-foot-deep tunnel that's 3 miles long. It runs from the Fields Point Sewage Plant in Providence, right under those three big, beautiful turbines, and it heads up under the State House and turns under the mall and terminates behind the Foundry Building. And every time it rains and sewage overflows in through combined sewer overflows, the tunnels capture that flow and send it to the treatment plant for treatment.
And beyond the specifics, the general problem, which we see up and down the East Coast, is that these older cities combined many sewers together, and when you combine that with rainfall, it's just too much to be treated all at once at the sewage station.
Exactly. That's exactly correct, Barnaby. You know, this sewage system in Providence is one of the oldest in the country. Providence, Pawtucket, and Central Falls. They realized in the late 1800s that horse manure was a bad thing to have on the streets, and our sewage actually went right into the urban rivers, the Woonasquatucket River and other rivers. And in the early 1900s, people began getting sick from eating the oysters, and we had a great acreages of oysters in the right. Upper Providence
Very
River.
Famously so.
Famous 5,000 acres of leased oyster beds. And people started to get sick, and they realized they had to build a treatment facility to treat that waste, and that was in the early 1900s. So it was one of the first treatment plants built in the nation.
And this is what the Narragansett Bay Commission has inherited this. It wasn't called that then, but...
That's right. It was owned by the City of Providence, the Fields Point plant, and they were being fined by the EPA to correct the environmental problems. And the Narragansett Bay Commission was formed through a bond referendum in 1981, and the Bay Commission was formed And we studied this combined sewer overflows, and we realized that it would be best to do in a three-phase approach. Phase one was completed in 2008. Phase two is ongoing right now, and it's creating a large interceptors along the Wenasketucket and Seekonk rivers, and that's going to really clean up our urban rivers, and that'll be done at the end of this year, and that will be going online soon. So we're going to see another big boost in water quality.
So when you say phases, this is increasing your capacity to capture some of this combined CSO, is what we call it.
Yes. A CSO is basically a pipe that goes right into the river. Right. And when the sewage system itself is over capacity from rain, it overflows to the river.
Right.
Now, hence
to the bay.
And hence to the bay.
Right.
So these interceptors will capture those pipes and send that flow into the tunnel and send it back to Fields Point for treatment. Essentially cleaning up these urban rivers now. So where we've cleaned up the Upper Province River in the first phase, now we're branching out to the urban rivers.
And you mentioned those big wind turbines. Those actually are providing wind power to pump the material through the sewage treatment plant.
Absolutely. We're using green energy to provide a large portion of our power at the Fields Point facility.
I think this is I don't think people realize how large a project this was and how complicated the problem was you had to solve. And I think the Narragansett Bay Commission deserves great credit for really looking at the big picture. There were some interim solutions we could have gone for. And it's interesting, I hadn't realized we were one of the first sewage treatment plants. But it would make sense because, once again, we're on this wonderful bay and we've been trying to turn the bay around and had great success. So.
We have. I feel that we've got the best water quality that we've probably seen in Narragansett Bay in 100 years. Keep in mind, 100 years ago, we had the Industrial Revolution going on, raw sewage going into the bay, factories, metal finishing companies and manufacturers, all of that waste was being dumped into our rivers.
Right.
So at this point, we've seen a great turnaround, and it's only going to get better.
That's one of the points we want to talk about. This is a success story, and it's a story of a community engaging in their urban rivers, making them healthy both environmentally and ecologically, but also for human health. And we'll talk for a moment about some of the things that Alicia is doing, which are equally exciting. It's a great story, but it's underground, and people don't quite see how it goes together. And
we call it the biggest project you'll never see.
You'll never
because
see.
It was done 300 feet below grade.
Yeah.
Now, phase two was done above grade and on the streets and digging up roads, and that did inconvenience some people, and we recognize that. Phase three looks like it's being reevaluated at this time, but it looks like it will be primarily an underground tunnel project in some fashion, some form.
Well, and I also, you know, when I was on your website, I was looking at a lot of the other programs that you have. You really are out in the community. And again, I wasn't aware, but you've got this great shellfish transplant program, which is quite fascinating. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? We've worked with the DEM over the years. Keep in mind, the shell fishermen are impacted by bay closures, so it really affects their livelihood. So over the years, we've partnered with DEM and DEM would oversee the program, but we were a partner with them and helped them to transplant millions of pounds of shellfish over the years from polluted waters to clean waters where they could harvest them when the water is ready.
And I'm sure those millions of pounds translate to millions of dollars for the Rhode Island economy as
Big revenue, yeah. Big revenue for the state of Rhode Island. And, you know, based upon the CSO Phase 1 project, the shellfishermen are realizing 65 extra days of shellfishing now due to cleaner waters. And DEM has relaxed their shellfishing regulations to accommodate this. The bay used to close after a half an inch of rain or an inch of rain, depending upon the areas. And now they've extended that. It now closes after 1.5 inches of rain or 0.8 of an inch of rain.
So, and this isn't a change in the standard. This is a recognition of the improvement that these infrastructure investments have done.
That's right. Because we're collecting that dirty water, dirty water is getting into the bay, and it provides them additional days that they can fish the waters.
And we've got an even cleaner, brighter future because the CSO is about 30% capacity? Do the phases line up about that way?
The initial studies, Bonneby, indicated about 2.2 billion gallons a year of CSO discharges to the bay. The Phase 1 CSO tunnel is capturing about 1.1 billion.
Okay,
so we've already reduced the bacterial load by about 50% in our calculations. So it's significant. And now we're going to, by capturing that first flush, as they say, of the sewage that would come out of those urban river that go into those urban rivers, we're going to see a greater achievement.
And you're doing many other things other than the CSO project. Many, many point sources and distributed sources are being addressed. Water quality in general is a success story in the state.
Yeah. The sewage plants in Rhode Island alone have already spent $275 million just recently to remove nitrogen and phosphorus from the wastewater streams. And that causes algal growth. You remember the 2003 fish kill.
Yep.
Narragansett Bay Commission has reduced its nitrogen load by 78% since the year of the fish kill already. So we're at the lowest levels of nitrogen we've ever seen going into the upper bay, and that's going to result in cleaner water, better light penetration, growth of eelgrass, population of new species in the upper bay.
Yeah, and, you know, I really want to congratulate you two again on reaching out to the community, because I know that you have involved the community with over 500 junior scientists that gathered year-long, and they helped to clean the rivers. And
we have a great, great educational program at the Narragansett Bay Commission where we educate school children. And we have we go into the classrooms and teach the kids about water quality, collecting samples, and the importance of clean water. And they collect samples and they write reports on this. And they have once a year, a big workshop, usually at Goddard Park, where they present all of their findings. And it's a very, very well recognized and award-winning program. We also have all of our information on our website, snapshotofthebay.com at narrowbay.com. And all of our water quality data is there, and that's used by fishermen. They can see instantaneously water temperature and dissolved oxygen levels in the upper bay, so they'll know whether it's a good day to go fishing or not.
And the other important thing about education is everyone, including students, but adults as well, have to realize the impact of their behavior on the bay, that we don't pour waste oil down the drains, that we properly dispose of waste, because it's everyone's responsibility to do this, and it's moves to the entire community's benefit.
Absolutely. And if the parents aren't getting it, the children certainly are, and they're teaching them those good behaviors.
Exactly. It goes back the other
way. That's right.
And I think that's a wonderful segue to, you know, to bring in Alicia here talking about, I know that you are doing so much with the Manaskatucket River Watershed Council. And can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know you bring the community together, and, give us a little background.
Sure, Bronwyn. Well, originally, we really started our organization to try to bring back the community of Olneyville, which was really the most economically challenged neighborhood in Providence. And we thought, well, let's do it by trying to restore the natural resource there, and that is the Winnasquatucket River. And we restored 52 acres of parkland and built a bike path and started doing fish restoration projects in the river. And here we are 12 years later, and we've had some fantastic successes. We now have 7 miles of bike path that people can use. Last year, we just opened up another 1.5 miles. And we've been monitoring what kind of fish and how many are living in the Winnasquatucket.
I saw on your count it's growing, so...
It's good news. True. Particularly we've been trying to bring back the native alewife. Those are herring that always lived in the river. They spend their whole lives out in the ocean, but they need the river to spawn, to create new fish. And we've had a lot of problems with that on the Winnasquatucket, mostly because we have so many dams. It's such an industrialized river. So we've been able to bypass a few dams with fish ladders and take down a couple of dams, and then every year we count how many herring return. And just to give you some ideas, in 2011 we counted 7,200 fish, 2012 9,300, 2013 12,300, but this year was a huge breakthrough. 2014 we counted 39,500 fish on the river. And our goal for the lower river is 40,000. We're still trying to get through another dam, but we are so encouraged that this project has really been working.
Now, you must work with a large core of volunteers, almost like we do at Waterfire, because I know you're a nonprofit as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the size of your volunteer corps and where they come from?
Oh, absolutely. We have so many projects that involve volunteers. Fish counting is just one of them, and that's about 40 volunteers a year. But in all, we have about 1,000 volunteers we work with every year. And those volunteers help us clean up the river, clean up the bike path, count fish, monitor the water quality in the river, teach programs to young people.
That's right. You do.
You have a great youth program. A ranger program, all sorts of things.
It's true. Oh, so Barnaby is referring to our River Rangers program, which is a fantastic program where we hire local youth that live around the river, age 16 to 24. We hired 10 of them this year. And we teach them to be stewards of the river. And they learn great skills like landscaping, maintenance, cleanup. They learn how to use heavy equipment like weed whackers and mowers. They take care of the bike path and they patrol it and they make people feel really safe on it.
And they also explain the importance of environmental engagement and the same message we were talking about with Tom about the larger message that NBC is working to get out.
Exactly. They are our ambassadors.
One of the other things that's wonderful about the Wenasketucket River is it's so firmly integrated into the history, the landscape, the mills that were all built there that brought the immigrant community to Rhode Island were there for water power. So it all knits together into a larger historical story, which is compelling.
And I know that you have some events coming up, actually rather soon, right? And I'd love to hear about them. We've only got a few minutes left, so I want to make sure that we get those in.
Oh, thanks, Bronwyn. Yes, we have our big fundraiser, which is the Woonee River Ride. It's a fantastic bike ride or walk. It's good for the whole family. You can choose from 5, 10, 30, 50, or a 62-mile ride. 62 miles is a metric century, so if you feel like you really want to do a century, here's your easy way out. And this year, we're going to incorporate the Wenasketucket River and the Blackstone River. Those are both of our Rhode Island American Heritage Rivers. There's only 14 in the country, and we really wanted to show people what wonderful water resources and land resources we have. So this is a great chance to do that.
And if somebody wants to participate, how can they get more information?
Really easy. Just go to woonyride.org, WOONYRIDE.org.
All right. And, you know, Tom, anything else coming up with NBC that's big and exciting? I know you just won an award, right?
We did. We won a national award from the Water Environment Federation for the best water quality improvement in the nation for up in Narragansett Bay. So we're very pleased about that award, and we'll be accepting it in August at a Water Environment Federation conference.
Well, I want to thank both of you and your groups and all of the good work that you're doing, because, as you know, water is very important to us at Waterfire, and that's why we'll have those fish out there on the river. We have to take a quick break right now, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the Woolly Ride, and I hope we see you on Saturday.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for all your work. It's really great to see
you. Thank you,
Bonnie.
You too.